The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People with Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
And all our wonderful listeners. Somebody else there.
I thought you were going to say, and like the dogs are in the cars.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah,
no.
That's
against the law.
We don't want animal control.
We would never do that.
We'd never
put our dogs in the
windows rolled down and the sunroof open.
Never.
Mm-mm. All right, let's see. My sound is on too loud there. It's making my ears bleed just a little bit.
Was it?
Yeah. Forgot to check that before we got started. Hey, so today... Well, let's see. Should I do the homework or today?
Oh, you should do the homework. Let's get that out of the way.
How about both? So today we have some current information for you. We usually have current information, but we have really current information, and it's all about the our favorite people, the Department of the Interior. And for those of you who don't follow government bureaucracy, the Bureau of Reclamation is part of the Department of the Interior. And if you haven't been to the Department of the Interior building in Sacramento, you've missed a lot and probably kept all your clothes on, too. Because I got to tell you, it was just like the airport. I had to take my watch off. Like, really? My watch? I think I can get my watch through the metal detector at the airport. Anyway, we are here with, well, not in real life, on the phone anyway, with Lawrence Kogan, who is the principal of the Kogan Law Group, president and CEO of the Institute for Trade Standards and Sustainable Development. The good kind of sustainable development, not the bad kind. Just in case people just...
Is there a good kind?
Just in case people just turn their radios off.
Sustainable. I'm not sure. I'm going to need a little explanation
just,
on
just
that.
Just in case they thought we'd gone to the dark side.
I get whacked every time I say sustainable.
Larry, why'd you call it that?
Why? Because what we try to do was to... persuade those on the liberal green sustainable development bandwagon that we were part of their camp.
Ah,
and so
psychology.
We were being sneaky.
Yes, in that case, we're very sustainable.
In that case, the sneakiness has ended.
It sustained us for a while.
You were able to slide in undetected.
Yes, and since we're a 501c3, we can enter in to all these UN venues and look as legitimate as any of the other illegitimate liberal groups.
Yeah. Well, that's fun. That's a good answer. I keep meaning to ask you that. And you were on with us because I had read an article from that organization that you had written, oh my gosh, like a year and a half ago. And then here we all are, fast forward to the joyride with the Klamath Basin. And for those folks on the East Coast that are listening, I guess I should point this out. On Sundays, we air live from noon to 2 Pacific time here in far, far northern California, far away from Hollywood, far away from the fruits and nuts, far away from all that insanity.
Fruits and nuts, could you define that a little more?
No.
Okay.
They already had the newsflash this morning was all in the bathroom bill, so I think they're covering that nationwide, actually. Yeah, okay. I think that's handled.
All the fruits and nuts I can take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And coming to a restroom near you. And then on Mondays, we air East Coast time from 2 to 3 on the Conservative Commandos Network, and they broadcast on WNJC 1360 AM. We aired like three different times last week, so we were popping into their rotation lots of different times, and they're airing the whole two-hour show. He just needed the hour, so we only have our first hour back east from 2 to 3. So the rest of the time, you can catch us at wethepeopleradio.us, and by this afternoon, we will have a commercial-free archive up. Hope you'll send it around and let your friends listen to it, and if the commercials drive you nuts, wait till the commercial-free archive comes out and listen. Found out yesterday, I did a little hunting through the who's listening from where.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, we have a whole boatload of people listening from the Ukraine.
Yeah, some foreigners.
We had 150 people in the Ukraine last month, just in the last like 3.5 weeks, listening in the Ukraine.
Hmm. That's because probably my name harkens from that region of the world.
Oh.
Ethnically, my name somehow pops up in Belarusia.
Oh, that's interesting. Then we had some Canadians, some Chinese. We had really a bizarre smattering. I always like it when they listen through the website, because then I can see where they are. I can't see who they are. Well, I'm not the NSA, but I can see where they are.
Aaron, these same people visit the ITSSD website. Most of our visitorship actually comes from Beijing.
Really?
Yeah, Beijing, Ukraine, Belarusia, Russia.
Uh-huh. We had a hunk from Africa, too. That was somewhat inexplicable. Yeah. Canada was, you know, we've had lots of guests on from Canada. Anyway, just a little side note.
Well, Beijing listens so they can get a breath of fresh air.
Exactly.
the Klamath region's got a lot more fresh air than Beijing.
Exactly. And for those people who can't listen by computer or would like to have somebody else tune in, I know Conservative Commandos, I know their network has lots of good shows, and they air that on a loop all the time. So you can pull the shows up whenever, but you can call a phone number. It's 832-999-1199. I'll give that to you again in a little bit. So if you have somebody who says, oh, I'd like to listen, but I can't, if they want to listen from either noon to 2 on Sundays here, they can catch us online. But if they need to use the telephone, listen Mondays 2 to 3 East Coast time on 832-999-1199. Kind of useful.
Yeah.
All right. So, now, speeding on, Larry, talk to us about what, I don't even know where we want to go today. I don't know how we want to do it. So we'll just follow along. How do you want to lay this out?
Well, I think there was a recent news report. There have been news reports in the last several weeks concerning the effect of the signing of several basin agreements affecting water use in the Klamath Basin. And there have been several articles talking about the need to replace part of the Klamath Irrigation Project, particularly that part operating within the Klamath Irrigation District, which, as you know, I'm legal representative to. And these issues would appear to be separate and distinct issues, but they're actually quite linked because of the Bureau of Reclamation's efforts to ensure that the basin agreements actually are implemented and that there's very little resistance to that implementation.
And, of course, those agreements are totally in the best interest of the irrigators. Is that correct?
Well, the Bureau of Reclamation, obviously, you know, is the Mid-Pacific Regional Office is based in Sacramento. And that office obviously has its own agenda for purposes of fulfillment in the region, but it also does follow the instructions of, you know, of the Bureau of Reclamation headquarters in Washington, D.C., which, as you know, is a part of the Secretary of Interior's office. It's an agency within the Interior Department, and the Interior Department, as you know, is run by the infamous Sally Jewell. Before that, Ken Salazar. And as a member of the cabinet to the White House, the Interior Secretary is instructed to follow White House agenda. So if you track it all the way upstairs, you can see the connections between what the White House wants to happen out in the Pacific Northwest and how the Sacramento BOR office is or is not implementing those wishes. The basin agreements, we believe, is part of a White House agenda out west, which is also occurring in other states like Montana, where I have clients, that is seeking to curtail water use in agriculture for the sake of environmental interests and tribal water rights. And the Klamath Project is one of the largest projects for irrigation in the country. So it is a ground zero of initiatives, including these basin agreements, which have been in the works for now almost 15, 20 years in some form.
Yeah, and why, so for people who are thinking, well, why have these been in the works for, you know, almost two decades? Why is it that they haven't gone through in your legal estimation?
Well, it was started back in the Clinton administration when they wanted to clean up the irrigation areas and then return them to a wild state of nature. Hmm. And fortunately, there were numerous members of the community in the Klamath Basin and in Northern California, Siskiyou County, that did not believe that this was in the best interests of their farms and ranches that were operated for generations. And they opposed what the government had wanted to do. Fortunately, there have been enough of them for all those years to push back the initiatives and to hold the government in check, except for a blink back in 2001, where the holdovers from the Clinton administration were able, during the early part of the Bush administration, to shut the water down on the irrigation project. And that, as you know, resulted in the infamous Bucket Brigade public protest, peaceful public protest, that ultimately resulted in the turn back of the water, turn on of the water.
At which point they stopped doing accounting on that project, but there's more on that. For those of you who think that this doesn't affect you, maybe you're listening in the East or in the Ukraine, these kinds of policies are very widespread. It isn't just on the West Coast. It isn't just in America. I swear, last week, every time I talk to Larry, he's like, it's socialism. It's socialism. I need to get one of those little easy buttons. It's socialism. So this is ultimately going to cost us all money. It may cost us all power, because we're talking about green hydropower that ultimately they want to take out, so that we will be beholden to dopey wind farms and even dopier solar panels that mm-hmm. And those companies are all going broke, by the way, just in case haven't kept up with the news. But we've got to take a really, really quick break, and then we'll be right back to explore all of that. So I always hate, before we take the first break, for people to think, wow, this isn't a show for me. It is. It's for you. This is We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I promise you'll have fun. Joining We the People Radio, we are here with Lawrence Kogan, the attorney for the Klamath Irrigation District and other various projects on the Klamath situation with the dams and the Klamath project. Larry, you want to give them a little snapshot on, I mean, when we talk about the Klamath project, it sounds like we're digging a hole and putting up a building or something like that, for those people who don't get what that means.
Well, the Klamath Irrigation Project is a major infrastructure project that was constructed in the early 20th century to take what were once arid desert lands and convert them into productive farming and ranching lands. And the project consists of 16 different irrigation districts and a series of canals and waterwork infrastructure that distributes water to farms and ranches in the valley within these 16 different districts. The Klamath Irrigation District, which I represent, is only one of those districts, but it's one of the largest ones, with a considerable amount of influence regarding reclamation policy within the project. And unfortunately, these days, Bureau of Reclamation is not known to have the capability, let alone the funding, to build any more you know, infrastructure projects like these. So their focus now has been to maintain and operate these projects that were built a century ago as efficiently as they can with the staff that they have. A lot of the institutional knowledge in engineering and technical is slowly or is rapidly at this point coming to an end because a lot of the people are now retiring. So they got all these new people in that don't know much about irrigation, let alone engineering of the project, and they're all concerned about fish, wildlife, and environment. And there comes the rub, is that you've got different cultures here with different agendas.
Well, I think the agenda part of it is what I think is taking center stage because they may not have any knowledge on the dams projects themselves, but they should know what is going to happen if they take them out. I mean, that's
well, that
there's a huge impact there. And
sure, but above the dams, you have now I think they're down to 1,200 farmers. They had 1,400 farmers at one point up there. You have a lot of food that comes from that area. And I forget how much I had heard, what, 1,600? It's a huge number of miles of waterways up there. What is it? Do you know off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head? The project services, you know, provides full-service water to approximately 210,000 acres.
Okay, there. That's what I was looking
for. And I'm reading right now. So you know, and viewers can look. The Bureau of Reclamation has a webpage dedicated to the Klamath Project. And you can find out a lot of information there. And all the dams and reservoirs that are along the way that help store water for eventual use on the different croplands. I mean, the Link River Dam is really at the base of the Upper Klamath Lake is really where the water is stored for the project. And some of that water comes in from in-stream flows from northern Oregon, north of the project.
So what is their thinking, I mean, as far as the what's going to be the benefit of taking these dams out and depriving all this farmland of irrigation water, what is the benefit?
Well, the dams that they're talking about taking out, removing, are below the project. They start off with the Boyle Dam, John C. Boyle Dam, and they work their way into Copco 1 and 2 in California, and also the Iron Gate Dam in California. Those are the four dams along the Klamath River that are slated for removal, and which are mentioned specifically in the amended Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. The one that was signed on April 6th without most of the community knowing anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Or most of the people who were actually signatories to the agreement actually being on the agreement at the 11th
yes.
hour.
Klamath Irrigation District is a signatory to the original KHSA. However, it wasn't given an up-to-date draft of the agreement to be signed until the evening of March 31st. After it had already been announced that the signing ceremony would take place on Happy Camp on the Karuk Indian Reservation on April 6th. I guess everybody on the reservation at the signing ceremony was happy, but nobody else was.
I think you can say that again.
But Link River Dam and Keno River Dam are above, you know, Link River's right at and near the project. Keno is further down Klamath River. So it, you know, won't really affect the project very much, though the Lost River diversion flows into the Klamath River around that area. But Link River Dam may affect the project, but it's not yet slated to be removed. That's a drama that is yet to evolve.
Hmm.
Though we do know that a second agreement signed on April 6th, the Klamath Power and Facilities Agreement, provides for the full transfer of the operational control of Link River Dam from Pacific Corp, owned by, you know, Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett, back to the Bureau of Reclamation, which owns the Link River Dam.
Hmm.
And so your guys up there in the Klamath Irrigation District, they've retained you to deal with what?
They retained me to deal with the replacement of a large, of a significant portion of the KID's infrastructure for which it is responsible to operate and maintain. But they've also asked me to address some of the KHSA issues, which at this point have been limited to the procedural provisions within the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, which were bypassed when the party, the governmental parties and the tribal parties to the to that agreement decided they were going to make a new agreement and not share the details of the new agreement with KID. They shared them with the Klamath Water Users Association because the attorney there, Mr. Simmons, and the director, former director Greg Addington, were very keen on the agreement, and they were the ones that worked along with the government and tribal parties to provide, to come up with the provisions, as they did back in 2010. So they were party to those secret meetings, but we weren't. And my clients were troubled by that. District members were troubled by that. Not the former board, though, because the former board was in bed with the Klamath Water Users Association and with the government.
So to put it in kind of a framework for people who don't follow this issue or do, but it's so darn confusing they've lost track of the moving parts, give us an idea of representative size of these. Because when you hear Klamath Water Users, they're the ones who are, they've come out with public statements saying that, you know, they represent all the irrigators up there. And then the Klamath Irrigation District kind of sounds like a few guys off in the corner that are just... dissenters. What's the breakdown on who's, covering
from what
this?
I understand, Aaron, from what I understand, the Klamath Water Users Association has a bigger bark than it has a bite. And it only represents one-third of the basin's irrigators. It claims to represent many more people than that, but it really doesn't. They were offended when KID, after the recent November election, decided that spending $250,000 a year for lobbying and political play wasn't worth the money, because when you really look at it closely, KWUA is a political organization that focuses on promoting policies that are not exactly in line with irrigator interests. They're environmentalists. They promote wildlife interests, not irrigator interests, and no matter what they say, their actions speak otherwise. So when people are listening, they should be careful to note that KWUA does not represent the interests of KID irrigators, though they did represent the interests of the former board that held its position for almost two decades or more. And they were all involved in creating these basin agreements that were supposed to address conflicts in water use among the tribes, the irrigators, and the environmentalists. So what was presented to the public was a conflict of interest between irrigators, farmers, irrigators, tribal interests, and environmentalists. They manufactured a conflict, so they had a solution. The solution was to create a compromise where farmers and ranchers gave up not only their access to water, but the exercise of their water rights, in order to mollify the tribal interests that claim Aboriginal time immemorial water rights in the in-stream flows that eventually make their way into the project. They also have exaggerated the fish and wildlife damage caused by these dams. They don't talk about a lot of other issues. Nobody's concerned about people. They're all concerned about fish, and they manufacture fish history by planting fish in regions of the river, areas of the river where there is no proof of indigenous existence of certain fish, coho salmon for one. They come up with water science that isn't really science-based policy, but policy-based science. That is supporting the dam removal effort.
Right, and you also have some records of decision that play in. We need to take a quick break, and when we come back, let's talk about that a little bit, because there's some backlash on the endangered species with farmers and things if they wind up taking out the dams. And then let's talk about some of the contracting issues up there. We actually called the show the Heavy Hand of the Department of the Interior, and I know we have some fun music to play based on your op-ed, so we don't want to cheat anybody out of that. We'll be right back with you. You are listening to We the People Radio. You can join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. This particular show has a lot of moving parts. We've done a bunch of shows on it because it's such an issue out here. And it does tie in with this, you know, for all those of you that are wondering what the Obama administration's going to do before they get out of office at the end of the year. Well, this is one of those things. So we don't want you to miss any of the pieces along the way, since we're right smack in the middle of it, because I think if you miss any of the parts along the way, you won't be able to figure it out. If you have come in late on this topic, we've done lots of programs about this. But I did list a helpful link from the Klamath Basin Crisis website, actually, on the bottom of today's page. And it's got probably more information than you could read in a week. But if you're looking to try to make sense of some of this, listen to some of our former shows, maybe do a little reading there. It's there's a lot of opinion out there. I'd steer kind of clear of that and stick to the things that are factual. We try to bring you facts here, although we have our opinions. Well, I mean, everybody has their opinions. It's silly,
humble,
you know.
Humble but accurate opinions. Yeah,
humble but accurate opinions, but we do try to stick to the facts, ma'am. So, Larry, what's going on with the interior guys and contracting and whatnot up there? Can you talk about that?
Yes, we can, since it is public knowledge that the there is a portion of the KID infrastructure along the Sea Canal that is known as the Sea Canal Flume, which is pretty much kind of like a portion of a canal that's elevated above ground, and it's encased in kind of like a concrete hot dog bun. And in order to get the water to move across the district, this flume, kind of like a slide in an amusement park, carries the water across an area. The structure is about 4,400 feet long, and it's about 95 years old. I mean, the whole project's 95 years old, and this particular portion of it takes on a lot of stresses due to the amount of water that's being moved across it. And several years ago, the BOR had identified this structure as, you know, wearing down and in need of repair. And so for the last several years, KID has been undertaking maintenance and operation of this structure to ensure that it maintains its level of safety and doesn't pose any risk to humans or animals. And in 2013, the BOR then identified it as requiring repairs, you know, significant repair or even replacement, and then came to the conclusion that replacement was the only option. So they started requiring KID to come up with scenarios under which this structure would be replaced, and they had to hire and put out bids for an engineering firm, which they have secured, and then the engineering firm was to undertake an engineering analysis as to the best way to replace it. And that project has taken on, at this point, a significance because of the costs involved. At a minimum, it's going to cost $7.5 million to replace. It's likely to cost $10 million or more when all is said and done because of the expenses involved in engineering and oversight, as well as other types of expenses that are required that the district will incur. And then you don't even get into higher costs due to unpredictable project overrun.
And so to put it in perspective, there are many Bureau of Reclamation projects that have happened across the country. I forget how many, 130 or something like that. There are a lot of these large infrastructure projects. This particular one has, 16 water districts in it. This one water district has to fix a part of it because they're the people who do the operation and maintenance, but they technically don't own. Help me out with that. They technically don't own the hardware, well, right? The actual flumes?
The climate irrigation's relationship with the Bureau of Reclamation is detailed in an agreement that was first executed in 1954. And that agreement provides for the Bureau of Reclamation to retain title to the KID's infrastructure, known as the transfer of works, while KID would be responsible for operating and maintaining it. That means it would have to deal with the cost of doing that. Now, since they don't own the infrastructure, it ends up that the Bureau of Reclamation is the only lender of resort available, because without collateral, no lender would loan funds to the KID. So the Bureau of Reclamation came up with this contract to loan it money, all of it being repayable, none of it being, provided by the Bureau without the obligation to repay. One of the issues that surrounded this contract was whether a portion of it could be provided, portion of the funding could be provided without repayment obligations. There's a law out there, the Omnibus Land Act of 2009, which Congress had passed and the President signed into law, that provides for the Secretary with the option to designate the sea flume replacement as an emergency item, because it would pose imminent risk to human health and safety. But that designation has not been given to the sea flume because it doesn't pose an imminent risk of public health to public health and safety. And because it isn't designated as such, it's not entitled up to 35% non-repayable finance. So $10 million will come out of the pockets of every irrigator in the district, and assessments have already been increased to accommodate or to compensate for that loan that they're going to have to repay.
And in the scope of all things, how big a project is this?
This $10 million project right now, I think, is the largest among the largest of project replacement in the country.
Okay.
It's an important project for the Northwest, given the size of the climate irrigation project overall.
So this isn't just some podunk deal that affects a few farmers, and it's just a thing that runs some water. I mean, this is a big deal.
Remember, the project's over, it's almost 100 years old, if
right.
not older.
Right.
And therefore, that means that portions of this project will have to be replaced piecemeal. So there's going to be extra, additional significant costs to be incurred by farmers and ranchers within the various irrigation districts. KID faces another potential replacement repair issue, a canal, which will be probably several million dollars. So people can't take this replacement cost lightly. And they must look very carefully at the terms and conditions that the government would impose in a financing agreement. And that's what raised concerns recently, that the finance agreement that the government, the BOR, wanted to impose on the district were quite different than the terms and conditions of the 1954 agreement governing the relationship between BOR and Klamath Irrigation District. The contract terms would have substantially altered that relationship. The only problem is that BOR did not proceed in an open, transparent way, in a fair-minded way, to discuss this issue with the district. It decided by itself what conditions it would impose on the district and basically say, they told the district, you take it or we're not going to provide the financing. It may not be available because we may have to reallocate it to other projects. And unless you sign it soon, you may not get water delivery in 2016. And so it's only when, you know, that the district followed the government's dictate to vote on the approval of the financing agreement as is, the way the government wanted it to be implemented according to the government's own terms without negotiation, only when that vote took place under duress did the government let water start to flow through the sea canal.
So they were basically ransoming the water for the outcome they wanted.
That was part of it.
You will sign the contract or you won't get water. And it was interesting because at the time that vote took place with the irrigation district. Now, here are people who just wanted to grow food, you know? I mean, that's really what they were after. But, you know, you've got to do things in order to, like anything. It's like being part of neighborhood watch or school board or city council or anything else. So these guys are on this water board. Was not their life's ambition to be on a water board, I'm sure. And at the end of that meeting where they had to agree to sign the contract, they didn't sign it, but they had to agree to sign it.
While a government attorney is basically lining them out.
Yeah. And at the end of it, when the government attorney was asked, you know, if this were yours to do, you know, and this was let's translate this into the real world, and it was a private contract, would you sign it? And the guy said, well, you know, no. No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, it's a sucky contract, and nobody in their right mind would sign it, but
he didn't really
you're going to have to sign it.
He didn't say that, but he did laugh and say he wouldn't sign it. So
well, it
kind of tells you something.
Because, right, and we spoke to other irrigators outside the atmospherics of the meeting, and we asked them, you know, if these were the terms and conditions of a contract that you had to sign for your private farm business, would you sign it? And in every instance, they said no. Makes no sense. One of the conditions that were imposed pursuant to this contract was, well, even though the 54 agreement provided for 12 months to cure a failure to pay on time or a failure to perform an obligation for operations and maintenance on time, you still had 12 months to fix the problem under the old agreement before the BOR could legally stop the flow of water, or even take back the transferred works from the district. The Sea Canal financing agreement didn't provide for any period of cure. That means if you didn't pay on time, a couple days goes by, or if you didn't perform an O&M, an operations and maintenance item, that you were required to perform under a BOR schedule, they could stop water delivery, and they could take back the transferred works. That means the district would not have the opportunity, which it has under the 54 agreement, to buy back the transferred works. And if they bought back the transferred works, they would be able to operate it almost like a normal business, and they would be able to use the transferred works, if they knew its value, to collateralize whatever financing they had to secure in the private market, which means that they wouldn't have to always have to go to the BOR for money. It would give them independence.
Hey, Larry, Bob's making me an offer I can't refuse. Can you hear it? Can you hear it in the background?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that was the problem with this contract.
I think people will enjoy the article that you, the op-ed you did for the Capital Press. Bureau of Reclamation makes offer irrigators can't refuse.
Yeah, let's take a break. We're going to cover that.
we will hit that right when we come back. So for those of you that are too young, this is the music from The Godfather. I can't believe how many people haven't seen The Godfather. It's just wrong.
I'll make you an offer you can't refuse.
We'll be right back.
I'm going to make him an offer.
going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Okay, that's the scene from the movie, the tiny scene from the movie. Because we did find a lot of people who didn't know what that joke was about. Which is, unfortunately. It's wrong.
There are a lot of people who are younger than 40 years old, and they never saw the movie.
What the heck? I didn't think that was possible. Okay.
It's actually probably among the most famous lines in the movie.
I know.
And that movie's known internationally.
I know. Mm-hmm. That's why I was blown away. So when they made them the offer they can't refuse, they did kind of refuse it a little bit because they asked you to help them, right?
Yes, they did. They had approved through vote of the agreement, but they never signed the agreement because under the process, the agreement has to be put to the public for public comment for a period of 60 days. It was put forth for public comment on March 31st, and until May 31st, the end of May 31st, there will be a continued comment period. It's important that members of the Klamath community weigh in on the public comment. And because, really, why would they allow themselves to incur this level of debt without voicing their opinion? One of the other disturbing features of this contract is that it would allow the lender, the BOR, to adjust the repayment period when in their own discretion they thought that the KID has enough money in their bank account. And they could shorten the period, which would start at 10 years to repay $10 million. That's $1 million of principal a year plus interest. That's a lot of money that farmers and ranchers would have to fork over, which would raise assessments significantly. And if you have a couple of bad years in production or in the commodity pricing area, then that's going to be very difficult. It could result in a default of payment, and that could result in the turnover of the transferred works back to the BOR. So it's almost a contract that's intended to fail, the way it's been structured by the legal department of BOR Sacramento. That was what we were objecting to. So we went to Sacramento this past week, and we discussed in a professional way what our concerns were. And the regional director was very welcoming and hearing our comments. And hopefully, as he has promised us, that he will seriously take into account our concerns in order to open up once again the period to negotiate the contract, actually negotiate it for the first time. That means the public comment period may be suspended. And that would be a good thing so that the KID membership is, for the first time, adequately represented at the negotiating table.
And that's a huge, huge step in the right direction. And we need to take a hard break at the top of the hour. And when we come back, real briefly, we need to talk about somebody who, as a result of that meeting...
is working for the Forest Service now.
It doesn't work there anymore. Oh, ouch, it left a mark.
Yeah, the seats will be changing. So we're here with Mr. Lawrence Kogan for another hour, chatting about all these different things. Again, you're listening to We the People Radio. We air on the West Coast from noon to 2 on Sundays, and you will hear the first hour of the show in the Philadelphia, New Jersey market on WNJC Conservative Commandos Network from 2 to 3. We'll be right back with you.
Oh, yeah.